Bienvenidos and welcome to episode 54 of the Jacobin Sports Show. I am Matthew Miranda, not joined, as always, by Jonah Birch, sadly. Jonah is moving this week. That's not the sad part. He's moving back to New York City, so that's actually the good part. But anyone who has moved knows that moving sucks. Moving when it's hot especially sucks. Any of those who are unfamiliar with Judaism may not be aware that one of the levels of Sheol is moving, and that's where Jonah is right now. So I send out some love into the air and hope that it finds its way down to Brooklyn and that Jonah settles in nicely and peacefully back into the Big Apple. So today's episode is just me. Today's episode, we are going to talk about another slap in 2022 that has made the marquee, this time out of Major League Baseball. The NBA Finals, which are about to drop when the Celtics visit Golden State. The NHL is down to its Final Four. The Professional Footballers Association of England remind us that athletes are no smarter as voters about sports than anyone else. And, as we try to include in every episode, an ugly incident from Bulgaria. Apologies ahead of time if I sound like Jeff Van Gundy did during Game 7 of the Celtic Heat series, when the man had no business near a microphone, I thought. Today I have no business near a microphone. I sound under the weather. I am under the weather, but the people need an episode, and I needed to connect with the people, so here we are. So let's get started. And let's start today with the slap heard around the world 2.0. This one happened when Cincinnati Red outfielder Tommy Pham, on the field before the game, slapped Giants outfielder Jacques Peterson over a fantasy football dispute. Pham and Peterson are in a fantasy league with a few other major leaguers. I think Mike Moustakas is in the league, Manny Machado. The commissioner is Mike Trout, if any of those details do anything for you. And apparently there was beef. Pham felt that Peterson was breaking a rule by stashing a player on IR. The details of the actual dispute, who cares? Apparently no one cared except Pham, because Peterson didn't think he was doing anything wrong. Long and short of it is, Pham approached Peterson on the field before the game. They've never actually met in real life. Pham said something like, "Do you remember last year?" And Peterson said, "Fantasy football." And Pham said, "Yeah," and then smacked him in the face. Both teams ran toward the scene. There was no brawl because it's baseball. So a few things stand out to this. I just think that are interesting about this particular story being in the news. Maybe not the story itself. A little bit of both. One is the fact that this kind of thing, like Charles Oakley in the NBA was infamous for slapping opponents during games, before games, when the other team was warming up. He smacked Jeff McGinnis of the Clippers. He smacked some big dude, Tyrone Hill, I think, of the 76ers. I'm not at all saying that, like, oh, those were the good old days when you could smack another human being and people just thought it was funny. Like, obviously, I would rather live in a world where people don't walk around smacking each other, particularly millionaires not smacking each other about $10,000 fantasy league. So not saying it was better back in the day. It's just interesting to note that before the game, there was apparently a lot of anger from the Giants and from Major League Baseball toward the Reds, because there was a rain delay that night, and baseball and the Giants were insistent that Pham be kept out of the game and benched that night, and the Reds initially refused to agree to that. The Reds wanted assurances that if they sat Pham, that would count toward whatever suspension he was going to incur. Eventually they worked it out. He did sit, and that counted as game one of a three-game suspension. But I am glad that this kind of incident met with repercussions. I don't think back in the day it necessarily would have. It's also odd to me that Mike Trout, who is not the most vocal, you know, for a superstar, and like a face of the league that, you know, they would be dying to, in a rational universe, to publicize, Mike Trout doesn't seem to talk a lot. He doesn't get in front of a camera, really, unless he's playing in a game. But Mike Trout, who the commissioner of this fantasy league, has been moved to hold a press conference in New York, I think Friday this week when the Angels are in town. How ridiculous that Mike Trout is finally... Mike Trout would never hold a press conference, and the reason he has to do it now is because of a slap between two players who are not on his team about a fantasy football beef. I just think that's beautiful. Also, on the toxic masculinity front, something that has come out of this that I wish would get more attention. So, as Pham has elaborated back and forth with Peterson to the media about his side of the story, one of the claims that he's made is that Peterson kind of instigated this situation, inflamed it even more than it already had been, because last year when Pham was on the Padres late in the season, San Diego went into a tailspin to fall out of the playoffs, and Peterson apparently sent Pham, I think in a group text, memes like making fun of the Padres for struggling late in the year, and that we're still in a place as a society that a grown ass man is justifying physical violence towards another person because he teased him with a meme is not, that's not the best reflection on society. We're not getting a gold star for that shit being reality still. And I don't think it's being talked about nearly enough, that you see it all the time in sports. You know, I don't know. I guess that's the intersection, because it's a place where that, you know, red meat, hetero, toxic masculinity still can be so valued more than it is in most of society. It's still somehow valid to act like being teased or taunted is a justification for physical violence, for physical assault. I like Tommy Pham. I have very much in the past. He's one of my favorite players, but this is ridiculous. He's smacking people over a fantasy. It doesn't hurt him financially. It doesn't. It doesn't matter. You can't slap someone because they teased you with a meme. If you take nothing else from today's episode, please take away that. You cannot physically assault someone because they teased you with a meme. Moving on to the NBA. The NBA enters its finals. The Celtics will be visiting Golden State starting on Thursday night. A lot at stake for both franchises. The series is interesting on a macro and a micro level. On the macro level, if Golden State wins this series, it will give them four titles in the last 8 years. Only four franchises have ever done that in the NBA ever in its history. The 1950s Minneapolis Lakers, the George Mikan teams. Red Auerbach's 1960s Celtics, led by Bill Russell. The 80s Lakers of Magic, Kareem, and Worthy. And the 90s Chicago Bulls of Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and Horace Grant. Those are the only teams ever to win at least four titles within an eight-season span. So a lot of great historical company for Golden State, who kind of feel to me like they deserve that coronation. I think, you know, their end came about so much from injuries, just serious injuries, from playing in the finals, you know, every single year. They played in the finals, I think 5 years, yeah, 5 years in a row. That doesn't really happen a lot, and that takes a toll. And that's what happened to them, but they did a brilliant job of rebuilding, rebuilding with talent, rebuilding with size going forward that looks helpful. Players like Kuminga and Moody and Jordan Poole. just very exciting to see them try to cap off what's really been, in my lifetime, other than the 90s Bulls, like by far their greatest run of any basketball team. For the Celtics, you know, it's a lot simpler, but no less meaningful to them. If Boston wins this series, which would be their first title since 2008, it would be the franchise's 18th championship, which would be one more than the hated LA Lakers. And if you are familiar with the direction it looks like the Laker franchise is going in for the next couple of years, might be a while before LA gets back up to 18. So the Celtics and their fans who are not fans of the Lakers would love to get this 18th win and once again resume their spot atop the leaderboard for most championships all time. I find this series really interesting for how it reminds me of a series from the first finals that I really followed game in and game out, which was the 1991 finals. It was the first year that Michael Jordan reached the finals with the Bulls. They were playing the Lakers. This was just after, I think 2 years after Kareem retired. Vadi Divac was the new center, very great young center for them. And they had Magic still, and Worthy, and Byron Scott, and A.C. Green, like still so many great players from their winning teams. And it was a great collision of stories and styles, because you had one team that had won a bunch of championships over many years, was not in its prime, but was still, you know, plenty good to be a contender, if not the favorite. And then on the other hand, you had this up-and-coming team that had been knocking on the door for a little while, had tremendous athleticism and two-way skill at the wings, defensively just, you know, a nightmare. Those Bull teams were like velociraptors between Jordan and Pippen and Grant on that full-court press, and that ended up really playing out in the series. If you don't know, and then what happened in 91, the big question was it was Michael Jordan versus Magic Johnson, and who would come out on top. And everyone figured at some point Michael would guard Magic, and that's where the series would go one way or the other. And what happened was, like, Michael Jordan was, you know, 3 inches shorter than Magic Johnson. He did not get most of the work on Magic. It was Scottie Pippen, who was much longer and taller than Jordan, who got the assignment, and Pippen shut Magic Johnson down. And that freed up Jordan and the rest of the Bulls to get going, and Chicago ended up winning the series 4-1. So now in this series, again, you have Golden State in that Laker position. You have this team that has won all these titles over a number of years. They're not in their heyday anymore. This is not the 2017 team. This is not the 73-win team. They're closer to the end than they are to the prime, but they're still plenty good enough to have been many people's favorite, or certainly one of the top favorites this season, against another team in Boston who, like those Bulls, has been knocking on the door for a while, is led by dynamic athleticism and two-way skill with multiple wings, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, a defensive just juggernaut. The Celtics have been the best defensive team in the league by far now, really for about 6 months, 5 or 6 months. And it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. Just like in that series where Chicago had the answer to neutralize the Lakers' engine in Magic Johnson, a lot of interest in seeing how Marcus Smart, Defensive Player of the Year for Boston, can potentially make a defensive impact on Steph Curry. Curry has not quite been his best self for a while. He has not been the shooter this year that he has been in the past. To be fair, no one has been the shooter that he's been in the past, but he's been down a little bit. If Smart, you know, can harass him, make things difficult, take him down even a little bit more, you have a really interesting series there on your hand. Great matchup at the wings, Andrew Wiggins and Klay Thompson against Tatum and Brown. Celtics have the advantage in terms of size. They're a bigger team. They match up really well at the wings against anybody. Almost all of their players are effective on both ends, offense and defense, so they don't have to usually give up a lot to play the lineups that they want. Golden State's advantages, I think they're deeper than they've been in recent years, even later in their Kevin Durant years, and their defense has been really quite excellent, probably the best part of their game this year, which was more like what the early Golden State teams were like during their dynastic run. So I don't like trying to pick. Who wants to pick a series? Like, just sit, enjoy it. I think it'll be a great series to watch. I imagine it'll go, you know, 6 games, 7 games. I think people always say that, but I really think that with this one. It'd be very, very interesting to see. I'm very excited to see how it turns out. When Joan is back, I'm sure he will have plenty to say as a Celtic fan with whatever's going on, but it's a nice series. As a fan, they're two teams that are fun to watch, multi-talented, you know, easy to root for. And I say that as a Knicks fan who, like, is historically geared towards hating the Celtics. I don't hate the Celtics team. They're very likable. They're very easy to watch and to root for. I'm rooting for Golden State because I want to see them get that recognition again. I think it's a nice capstone on their run. But It will be fun just to watch it. Speaking of fun to watch, the NHL, yes, that's right. The NHL is in its final four, and game one of the Western Series between Edmonton and Colorado probably had more goals scored in it than the entire Eastern Series between the New York Rangers and Tampa Bay Lightning will. Colorado came out on top in game one, 8-6. It is the most goals scored in a conference finals, I think, since 1985 in the NHL. You don't see 8-6. That's just crazy. But those two teams are known for their explosive offense. You have a great contrast between the two series, where between Edmonton and Colorado, basically whoever scores last probably wins, which probably could literally mean whoever has the puck last wins. And in the East, you know, the Rangers are led by Igor Shesterkin, and the Lightning are led by Andre Vasilevsky, and those are the two best goalies in the world. That series, you know, there might be quite a few 1-0 games or 2-1 in overtime games in that series. There really may have been more goals between the Oilers and Avalanche than you're going to see from the Rangers and Lightning combined. But the flow of the game's been really nice. Playoff hockey is as good as anything in sports. If you don't even really like hockey, give it a shot, especially late in a close game and in overtime. NHL playoff drama, it really is an incredible thing. And these are such great matchups. The finals, whoever it is going to be great stylistically. I'm very looking forward to that from the NHL. So over the pond, across the pond, there are six nominees for the Professional Footballers Association Player of the Year. These are the awards that are voted on by the English footballers. And we hear all the time in America how sports writers shouldn't vote. They're idiots. They have biases. They have agendas. They don't know. They never played the game. How can they possibly vote on it? I've never understood how the players' union in the NBA, for example, approved of a collective bargaining that included writers' awards now as triggers for certain kinds of contracts and incentives. Like in the NBA, if you are named to certain teams, particularly on your first deal, if you reach certain all-NBA levels or all-rookie stuff, it will trigger in your contract opportunities for larger dollars, more years. It opens up things. So the players have an investment in the writers voting them into these positions. They have Jason Tatum of the Celtics missed out on, I think, $30 million, a potential $30 million, which he would have gotten because he didn't make, I think, the All-NBA first team 2 years ago. So there's a lot invested in this, and you always hear them, the players, being like, see, writers are idiots. You should let us vote. Remember, these are the same players that when Golden State was setting every record in the book in 2015 and 2016 and 2017, and Steph Curry is like at the absolute peak of his powers, literally warping the sport as we know it, and the NBA players voted for James Harden to be Player of the Year over Steph Curry. Now in England, here are your six nominees. If you don't follow football, English football, don't worry, because I'll tell you what's stupid about this in a second. Here are your six nominees for the PFA Player of the Year. Kevin De Bruyne from Manchester City. Three from Liverpool, Virgil van Dijk, Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane. And then from Tottenham, Harry Kane. And from Man United, Cristiano Ronaldo. Now, they're all valid. I mean, everyone on that list is arguably or inarguably the best player on their team. Most people seem to be in agreement that De Bruyne, Van Dijk, Salah, and Mane are pretty established canonical candidates. Like, they belong there. Cristiano Ronaldo scored like 18 goals, which is good, very good. And in most seasons, you know, most people doing that, you'd be like, wow. But United was so uniformly miserable and unsuccessful this year at everything that some people feel that Ronaldo, maybe Ronaldo doesn't belong on the list. Maybe Ronaldo is there for reasons other than his play. And there was a great article in The Athletic about football players admitting to the writer, not in the Premier League, the level below, the Championship, that when they vote on Player of the Year awards, they don't even know half the time anything. They don't follow other players. There's a player in the article who talks about he basically remembers how his opponents did when they played his team. Otherwise, he doesn't know how they're really doing. He doesn't study data or statistics. And that usually, like, he'll vote for someone because they used to be good, or he knows their name and they're reputed to be good. So it's not so much that Kane and Ronaldo are striking, like, my God, how can they be there? But when you have players like should Harry Kane be there ahead of Son Heung-min, his teammate? I would say most people would say no. Certainly a lot would not say. Does Ronaldo deserve to be there ahead of Bernardo Silva or Rodri or Joao Cancelo from City? Trent Alexander-Arnold had, I think, 18 assists for Liverpool this year. Declan Rice had a great season. So, you know, there's a half dozen other people who are probably more deserving of being there than multiple finalists, but we'll see how that one turns out. Sadly, from the world of football also, sorry, again, English football, a story out of Sofia, Bulgaria. Alan Pardew, who used to coach Newcastle in the Premier League, had been the head coach of CSKA Sofia. Sofia is the capital city in Bulgaria. They're a top-flight team in Bulgaria's Parva Liga, which is their Premier League. Pardew quit after the team's fans hurled racist abuse and bananas at the team, and in particular, the bananas were targeted at the team's four black players a week after the team suffered a disappointing defeat. So apparently the fans in Sofia waited for the team to show up to the stadium for their next game and basically racially abused and assaulted the black players on that team. I don't know what to say about this shit anymore. It seems worth hearing and it seems worth sharing because you should not know that that is happening. I think a lot of people know that it's happening, but it's not the kind of thing I think that we ever want to lose its shock value to us. Because the moment this kind of story becomes cynically dismissed as, well, yeah, like, that's just the news. That's just the way the world is. Like, that's not practicality. That's being narcotized. You got to hear this shit and it has to bother you. What you do with it, I don't know. It depends on your life and where you are and who your audience is and what you think you're able to accomplish, but you should hear this kind of story. You should share this kind of story. You should let the feelings come up in you that this story gives you. And I don't know. I can't think of more to say about it. It's so ugly. Yeah, I'm just going to leave you on that note today. Sorry, it's just ugly. I don't have anything else to say about that particular story. I will say that the Jacobin Sports Show can be reached on Twitter at Jacobin Sports. You can email the show with any thoughts or questions or suggestions you have. JacobinSports@gmail.com. That will be all for this week. We will be back with you next time. Once again, as the two-man team of Jonah and Matthew. So for now, everybody, enjoy your week. Enjoy this little tiny bite-sized episode. And see ya.